At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Shop Macy's VIP sale, going on now. Use your coupon or Macy's card and take an extra 30% off the latest fall trends from designers that rarely go on sale. And save 15% off skincare, makeup, fragrances, and more. Plus, shop fall specials for even more great deals on top brands at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe it. USC is 7-5 again. Oh no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raider Troy Radio, episode 545, coming to you on Wednesday, July 3rd. We're going to talk about the latest in USC football, including looking at EA Sports College Football 25. We're going to talk about the new changes to college football realignment and so much more here on this episode, including your calls, not calls, your emails, and all of that here on the radio, as well as you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy, email address Rain of Troy at fansite.com, and our phone number 818-643-7227. Suck it, what's Bruin Show. I'm your host, Mike Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Rancher Studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. I think we got to start off like by you know, just being honest with people. This is we are officially in Q3 of the calendar year, right? That means new things are happening. The start of the fiscal year, start of the, academic year, start of the soccer calendar, all those things. We started putting together this rundown, our episode. We're calling it USC's official welcoming to the Big Ten, because all the college football realignment stuff happened on July 1st. And then literally a few minutes before we started this, I discovered that USC's official start date in the Big Ten is actually August 2nd.
Welp. I you mentioned what you were going to name the podcast, and I was like, yeah, that works, because I got all caught up in the Pac-12 network turning off and everybody sort of giving another eulogy to the Pac-12 because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just sort of assumed that
for
there
all
you
intents
go.
And purposes, you know, we've got our new graphics rolling up over on YouTube. If you're watching us live on YouTube,
ESPN changed their conference groupings. So yeah. USC is in the Pac-12.
It's basically a Big Ten school.
College Press Box, which is the media resource for the Football Writers of America, has USC under the Big Ten.
If that's
umbrella.
Not official, I don't know what is.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, we objectively screwed up, but did we really?
I don't know. Greg in the chat says, if it makes you feel any better, Michael, this month is Big Ten Media Days, and USC is on the 24th.
Yeah, how can USC be participating in Big Ten Media Days
if they're not official?
If they're not officially part of the Big Ten.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah. It's like being engaged before you go on your first date.
Yeah. So it's...
Can't happen unless it's some weird reality show, which... SC being a weird reality show,
those exist.
You know, does happen from time to time. But here we are on July 3rd, the day before Independence Day. If the Pac-12 doesn't exist, then SC's not in the Big Ten, are they? Are they independent right now? No, technically not.
People have been calling for USC to go independent forever, so.
Yeah, you know. All right, let's get to the news, shall we? Okay, let's actually run down the college football realignment that took place over the weekend, or over the week. Officially, five schools have moved this week. Oklahoma and Texas are going from the SEC to the Big 12. SMU from the AAC to the ACC. They swapped an A for a C. Those are three of them, but let's run down the entire list of the changes so far. If you're new to what's going on in college football, the ACC is jumping to 17 teams, up from 14 with Stanford, Cal, and SMU. The Big Ten moving from 14 to 18, adding USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon. The Big 12 going from 14 to 16. They add Utah and Colorado. They also end up adding Arizona and Arizona State, despite losing Texas and Oklahoma. The Pac-12 down from 12 to 2, just Oregon State and Washington State. The SEC only adds 2, Texas and Oklahoma. The American Athletic stays the same, still at 14. They do lose Army. Army is off to the where did I miss this? Where did Army go? Did Army go independent again? I missed this. Where
Army is in the American.
Yeah, in the American. Sure, the things are all over the place.
At least this is according to ESPN. It's hard to keep track of this.
Yeah. Anyways, new things change in there. Where are you on college football realignment? How are you gonna you know, keep tabs on everything, because me personally, I need the college football game to come out in a couple weeks before I really start remembering exactly who's who and who's where.
Yeah, I think that realignment would have been much better if it had happened a long time ago and the Pac Big 12 had existed, if the alignment of the Pac-12 schools
with the 16-pack?
Yeah, the 16-pack with Texas, Oklahoma, and some other big 12 brands coming over and forming a super conference. I think both of those conferences would be way better off. But, you know, we have the Longhorn Network to thank for that not happening. And now we have a bunch of realignment that's completely illogical. And that's like what I feel about it is substantively, I am not opposed to realignment in the sense that this was inevitable. The money making that goes into the broadcast partners and conferences was always going to force teams to want to jump to the big power brokers, which turned out to be the SEC and the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
It's the logic of it that I don't like. Like, for instance, that Stanford and Cal are in the ACC, and that you know, USC and UCLA are playing in the Big Ten. Like, USC and UCLA going to the Big 12 would have made a hell of a lot of sense to me in the same way that the opposite was gonna work. It all feels hodgepodge, and also it all feels very temporary. Yeah. My feeling is generally that the NCAA as we know it today is not going to exist for football and basketball for much longer. And eventually we will get more massive realignment, and that massive realignment will be more logical because it will be more, mm-hmm. More from the ground up. So instead of living with the existing Big Ten and SEC footprints, we're going to end up with what amount to conferences that are put together by like the TV broadcasters or whatever other sort of controlling powers are there, but in a way that follows more regional lines, because that just makes sense across the board. So
yeah,
I'm almost like, okay, yeah. So, you know, will USC make it through an entire cycle of playing Big Ten teams? I'm not actually sure about that.
Yeah, there is this. I think the one thing for sure is that the state of college football is 1,000% changing, right? Like, it has changed this week and going forward. There's a 12-team playoff. There's, you know, all those things.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
That are changing. There's the realignment. There's, you know, NIL has become a thing the last few years. All of those things will change the landscape of college football now and going forward. There definitely is this weird sense of like, but for how long, like you mentioned, especially when you think about it, you know, 14 years ago when we were in this last realm of realignment, and then the 14 playoff was coming after that in 2014, it very much felt like the same thing. And that only lasted so long, right? Like mm-hmm. when Colorado and Utah came to the Pac-12, it's all weird. Tim in LA said in the chat says, "Gotta love conferences with numbers during realignment. The math ain't math." And yeah, the crazy thing is about the Big Ten. The Big Ten has not had 10 teams since 1990. I think that the Pac-12 had it right by changing the number, but I also think that isn't an indictment on the Pac-12 that the Pac-10 brand was not strong enough to remain the Pac-10.
Well, to be fair, part of the reason the Big Ten couldn't change the number is because the Big 12 existed.
Sure.
So you have to.
They could have been the Big 11 though.
I know, but like the Big 12 could become the Big 11. The Big 12 could go down to 10 and then they take the Big 10, or, you know.
Sure.
Like the existence of another big conference kind of messed them up. So I get why that didn't happen, but
yeah.
It's still, none of this has made sense.
This is one of those things where I think it makes sense.
Maybe don't have numbers in your conference name. Well, like, it should just be the Pacific Coast Conference and the... and the Midwest.
Well, I think there's
conference.
A reason the Big Ten spells out either B1G or Big TEN. You never see Big 10.
Yeah,
because it's incorrect.
Against AP style, but that's fine.
The B1G thing. How have they not redone the logo to where the G is an 8 now? 18 teams. Make the G and 8.
You know what? You should go apply to be the graphic designer for
Find
the Big
a way
10.
To do it. Like the Big Ten logo when they had 11 teams and Penn State was added in 1991 was so cool because there was the negative space of that 11 right in the middle. It looks so badass. It's like, actually, there's 11 teams. You see right here.
Well,
there's an arrow in the FedEx logo. Do you see it? It's right here.
It sounds to me like you should design a Big Ten logo and offer it to them. A Big Ten with the 8, with the G being an 8. Offer it to them.
It's too obvious of a thing.
Get us a payout, and then we'll be living large.
Maybe. Let's talk about recruiting. Big news there. 3-star wide receiver Corey Sims from St. Louis, Missouri, committed to USC on June 30th. 6'3", 205 pounds, picked the Trojans over Missouri, MIC, and Penn State, PSU. He's number 261 in the 24/7 sports rankings. Could become a 4-star, maybe, I guess?
Yeah, he's on the cusp, and he's a receiver that USC was really heavy after that seems like, even though you have the 3-stars sort of debate, he might be a 3-star, but he's a high-end 3-star. By the time this cycle is done, we could just be calling him a 4-star. I think some recruiting services do have him as a 4-star. He's just a big-bodied receiver who I was reading up, they think might move inside as a sort of, for lack of a better comparison because it's not quite the same, but like the Drake London inside receiver role that's like part tight end but part receiver situation. So that he's sort of an interesting prospect there for USC out of Missouri. And yeah, pulling him out from the home state team that's doing very well and has a lot going for it in terms of Missouri, that's a big pickup.
Hey, SC got a guy out of an SEC state right there, Missouri. Yeah. The first SEC state that comes to mind, I think, is Missouri.
It's Missouri, yes.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah. Another one, though, three-star Shamar Arnaud from Carrollton, Georgia, committed to the Trojans on June 26. He's a teammate of future quarterback commit Juju Lewis. He chose the Trojans over Georgia and Florida State.
Yeah, and you want to talk about, again, there's a difference between, you know, four-star, and he is a four-star in 24/7 in the composite. 24/7 Sports proper has him as a three-star. Again, this all gets very convoluted, but there's a difference between, like, three-star, four-star, and the teams that value them. There's a difference between getting a three-star that had offers from Idaho and Nevada and a three-star that had offers and was being pursued by Georgia and Florida State. So beating out Florida State specifically there, who was the main competition, and then obviously the home state advantage of Georgia. And it's not like Georgia didn't try to go hard after this guy, because he is the teammate of Juju Lewis, who Georgia would love to flip if they could get that done. So he's a player that comes with nice size. He's 6'2", 175. He's got good length. And USC will look to bring him in with that connection to Juju Lewis and see what they can develop him with.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's three-star offensive tackle Elijah Vicona from Rancho Santa Margarita. The Eagles, he committed to USC yesterday, July 2nd. 6'8", 368 pounds. That is a big, tall Eagle for sure. He chooses the Trojans over Washington and UCLA. Former basketball player, shocker, sort of needs to develop, but I mean, like Chris Trevino put on Twitter this week, you can't sort of teach that size.
I mean, USC fans have been asking, where's the beef? Everybody's been asking, what will USC do in terms of size going to the Big Ten? Well, that's a pretty resounding answer. That's a big boy. He's not the finished article.
Makes me drool.
He's definitely not the finished article, but that's the kind of guy you bring in and you take a chance on, and you see what you can do. Can you use that size to your advantage? Because you certainly, that kind of size doesn't grow on trees, especially on the West. In the West, we don't necessarily see a lot of 350 plus pounders. When you do, they're Samoan or Pacific Islander or whatever, Tongan.
Oh boy. You've really dug yourself a hole here.
Well, no, because I'm not actually sure what he is. So
go Polynesian.
He's Polynesian, but the size that you find are from the big Polynesian guys. And USC did a good job for a while of recruiting those Polynesian guys, but kind of fell off once Johnny Nansen left, and it's been a little bit more shaky on that front recently. So it's good to make that connection with Santa Margarita and to just bring in size like that you obviously need to develop. But I think that's the story for USC across the board, is if you want to start recruiting the big five-star ready-made guys, you mm-hmm. need to prove that you can do something with those three-star guys that you have that potential. Makes it a lot easier to convince a five-star, you know, 6'7", 300-pound tackle to come to USC if you've shown them what you can do with the guys who are maybe more on potential. And to be fair, Vicona is a rising prospect in this class because he's relatively new to, relatively unpolished in terms of football. The more he plays, the more camps he goes to, hopefully the better he gets.
Where do you stand on the sport? The guys transitioning from sport to sport here, it's usually basketball and football back and forth, right? where someone who is physically built for basketball can become a great football player after not playing it much. You think of Antonio Gates, right? Mm-hmm. Someone who didn't play college football. He played college basketball and then ends up as a Hall of Famer in the NFL, right? I always want to see that work out. And it's always one of those things where I think you dream of it working out. But I feel like a lot of times it sort of doesn't. So more power to Vicona if he can get this to land there, because that's the dream, is finding a guy who's physically built like that and getting him to take to the system, take to the game, and all that stuff.
Greg, in the chat asked, is he Zach Banner size? Literally, yes.
Yeah.
Zach Banner, he's actually bigger at this stage, which isn't necessarily better. Zach Banner was 6'9", 330, listed on 24/7 as a recruit.
Yeah.
Vicona is 6'8", 368.
Mm-hmm.
368 is not necessarily playing size, but we've seen, I mean, you know.
If you're 6'8", it is.
I mean, that's true. If you're 6'8", it is. That's very, very true.
Yeah, if you're 6'1", no. But if you're 6'8"?
The question is always, can he move? Can he move? Does he have the technical skills to put his size to good use? Because size only matters if you can beat size with technique.
Have fun with this one, Jake.
but yes, yeah.
Yeah, Elijah Vicona, by the way, great name.
It's good, yeah.
So like good. It sort of is a portmanteau of other Trojans in the past. Elijah makes me think of all the different Elijahs that SC has had. Mm-hmm. The Vi, you think of like Elijah J.R. Tavai?
Elijah Vera Tucker, so it's kinda Elijah
like
V.
Kind of. And the Kona, you think of like Jamar Sakona?
Sakona, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good name. It's a good name. Let's talk about EA College Football 25. We are less than 2 weeks away. The 15th, 9 p.m. Pacific time. That's when we'll be running over to our consoles and turning it on. There's new rankings out. EA has put out not only their deep dive into like what Dynasty Mode is, but into what is the factors in the games, the attributes. We now have the toughest places to play, the offensive, defensive, and full team rankings. Alicia, let's go down the list. Let's start with the toughest places to play. The Coliseum did not make it. Number one in the country is Kyle Field. The interesting thing is Austin Stadium doesn't even make the top 10.
Which is absurd.
Husky Stadium doesn't make the top 25.
Yeah.
Which, mind-blowing to me. The Coliseum not making the top 25, not a shock. That sort of checks out. The top 10 is Kyle Field for Texas A&M, Alabama's Bryant Denny, LSU's Tiger Stadium, Ohio State's the Horseshoe, Ohio Stadium number 4, Sanford Stadium from Georgia's 5, Beaver Stadium, Penn State is 6, Wisconsin's Camp Randall 7, Oklahoma's Gaylord Family, Oklahoma Memorial Stadium 8, the Doak at 9 for FSU, and the Swamp for Florida 10. Austin not being higher is weird. Oklahoma being so high is weird. I don't think Oklahoma is one of those places when people talk about hostile environments. Yeah. I'm not saying that it's not, but it's...
No, but like compared to Autzen...
Compared to Tiger Stadium...
Compared to the Swamp...
Yeah. I would put Oklahoma.
I saw a lot of criticism of this list because it seems to me that people who have been to all of the above say Tiger Stadium blows Bryant Denny and Kyle Field out of the water.
Yeah, Alabama being number 2. How much of the fact?
What you're going to say right now is my biggest problem with some of the perception of this list is like
the team you're playing.
If this list had come out in 2009, the Coliseum would be on there.
Yeah, and not back during the home winning streak.
Well, because of the home winning streak, right. But what that home winning streak was because USC had a good team and fielded good players and all of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, some of these stadiums are they really the actual difficult to play, or do they just tend to field good teams? Mm-hmm. Now, I've never been to Bryant-Denny. I've never been to Oklahoma. Some of these I can't necessarily speak to.
Yeah.
But I have certainly heard the reputation of Tiger Stadium. I know the reputation of Autzen and Rice Eccles. These are stadiums where even if
Rice Eccles is 18, by the way.
Yeah. Even if the team is not good, these stadiums are hostile environments and difficult to win in.
Mm-hmm.
Because of there's sort of architectural features that go into play. There's sort of fan
that's
vibes that go into play.
Husky Stadium not being here is a crime. Husky Stadium should be there.
I mean, has anyone ever said that like Michigan State is a you can't go into Spartan Stadium and I don't know about that. Like,
no, I would,
I don't know that I think of Boise State. I mean, Boise State again.
You got the field though,
because the blue turf. Field. But like, Boise State was always a tough play because Boise State was like was Chris good. Peterson had made them into a relative. A G5 juggernaut. So yeah, I just think some of this is a little weird. It is hard to quantify these things, and mm-hmm. We're gonna be biased because we have experienced what. I will go to my grave saying that Corvallis, Oregon is an absurdly difficult place to play, but I'm also biased. Oregon fans might sit there and say that go into Tucson, just go to Tucson for Arizona. So
you don't want to go to Stoke on a rainy night, yeah. Right?
So I get that some of this is also just like regional bias and personal bias, but. In personal trauma in the case of some places, but it's
let's get into the offensive rankings. USC ranks 25th in the country in offensive rankings according to the game, with an overall team ranking of 83 on offense. Number one is Georgia, two Oregon, both of those are at 94 overall. Alabama is 91 overall, third place. Colorado, eighth with an 89 overall offense, but the Trojans 25th. What are your thoughts here?
I call BS on the idea that USC will be anywhere near the 25th ranked offense in actuality this year. Now, I know your rant about this, and I will let you make your rant about this, but I think it's wildly underrating what USC has offensively to put them at an 83 overall. And I think a lot of that has to do with the quarterback. I would have been very, very curious to see what the offense would have been ranked with Caleb Williams at quarterback. But I think so much of this is like almost like a slight on Miller Moss, who, by the way, was like a top 150 quarterback. And USC has a lot of talent, like literal like recruiting talent, wide receiver, at running back. I think certainly the offensive line is weighing this down probably, and that's a big problem, certainly within the game, but also in reality. But like in reality, there is no universe where Virginia Tech and Texas A&M and NC State have better offenses than USC.
No, but this is why I think.
I mean, I would also say it's absurd that Ole Miss is behind Penn State and Utah.
No,
Clemson being number 10 over Ole Miss is absurd.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
Colorado being number 8. Is like again, these it's all about quarterback. That's Sugar Sanders lifting that up, because the rest of their offense doesn't have that kind
of
juice.
So much of it, like these team rankings in video games, are about talent, and it's about prestige.
Yes.
And so much of it comes to the individual talent that you have, and SC is lost a lot of the star talent that USC has. Considering that Caleb Williams is not on the roster anymore. If Caleb Williams was on this roster, they'd have a top 10 offense, because he would be like a 98 overall player in the game.
Yeah. 99.
That buoys your offensive rating a lot. So I think when you look at this, like, you know, what makes USC's offense good? So much of it is the Lincoln Riley offense, right? The Lincoln Riley offense does not factor into this at all. This is strictly a representation of roster build. And I do think that, yeah, SC has a lot of talented guys that should be on here, but compared to the teams of yesteryear in terms of name brand guys, I don't think there's a lot of players in America that the average college football fan can rattle off on USC's roster right now. A year ago, that wasn't the case because they had Caleb Williams. But random guy in Dubuque, Iowa, is he going to be able to tell you about Deuce Robinson? Probably not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does he know about Jacoby Lane?
And that's why part of me thinks that, like, it will be fascinating seeing some of these numbers change.
Yeah.
Because there's a reality where next year, those guys are household names, and suddenly right. this talent rating, Miller Moss is
Colorado.
Suddenly a 90, and right. you know, Deuce Robinson and Jacoby Lane and Mekhi Lemon are all, you know, the premier receivers in the West, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So again, everything comes back to everything that we talk about this offseason. Come back to, like, USC is in control of what these numbers, even on a video game, USC is in control of what these numbers look like.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to go out there and win.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about Colorado, but you can talk about Colorado and how, you know, that you could say that they're a fraud. You can say they're overrated, this, that, whatever. The one thing you cannot say is that they don't have star power and brand. Like, they do. Like, Shedeur Sanders, Travis Hunter, like, they exist. They are, you know, going to be rated in the 90s, both of those guys. And they will put up the offensive and defensive rankings for Colorado because of that. That's how video games work. Let's talk about the defense. SC does not have a top 10 defense. Shocker. Really shocking. But SC has a top 20 defense. The Trojans are 16th in the country. Now, again, a lot of people looking at this and like, does that mean that the USC is a six? EA thinks that USC is the 16th best defense in the country. They were like 135 last year. Like, that's not how it works. This is, again, a representation of USC's talent on defense. We have talked forever about how USC always has talent on offense, on defense, wherever. And when you look at the guys that SC got in the transfer portal, this year, most of the transfer portal talent came on defense. You know, the Arnold brothers, right? From Oregon State. Kamari Ramsey coming over from UCLA, right? Like, there's guys there. Eric Gentry's back, right? There's Bear Alexander is there. I think it makes sense that SC's defense could be over 86 overall rated on paper before you even see anything. Because strictly talent-wise, there's talent there. Are they going to mesh together? Is the defense going to work? Who the hell knows? That's going to be the big question about USC's defense this year. I don't think that SC's defense should be expected to be 16th in the country in terms of production or statistically or any of those things. But strictly in terms of talent in the rawest sense, that doesn't sound crazy.
Yeah, and I think that this is the thing that bodes really, really well for USC this season. We're not trying to take these rankings too seriously because
No, certainly not.
it's a video game. I think they're going out for accuracy, but it's also not necessarily like they're not setting these ratings as like a predictor of future success.
Right.
They're setting these ratings based on who is going to exist within their video game. But to me, USC's offense being 83 overall and USC's defense being, 25th ranked and 83 overall and USC's defense being 16th ranked and 86 overall, I can draw a conclusion here that is extremely positive for USC, which is this. The offense has the Lincoln Riley factor. It will outperform that overall rating because the system dictates that it will. The defense is going to be a question of whether or not Alex Grinch was actually underperforming his talent? Was it the players or was it the Grinch? And this rating says that at the very least, the evaluators for College Football 25 are looking at not just the transfers that came in, but the inherited talent that Danton Lynn has brought, that picked up, and says, no, actually, they have a bunch of players who are perfectly fine and perfectly capable of being, or certainly have a certain level of talent. This rating says Danton Lynn can do the UCLA transformation with this squad. Now, again, is this the end-all be-all rating? No. But, like, low-key, I like the position that USC is in if we're framing the season in this way.
Yeah. Yeah. There's pieces there. There is, you know, we talk about how SC doesn't have the All-American playmakers of the Pete Carroll era on defense. Yeah. Agreed. But there's at least playmakers there to be able to be more than competent on defense and be very good. We've talked about it before. There's rosters up and down USC's schedule that you would not trade with, but they have there's teams there that absolutely have outperformed SC on offense or defense or whatever based on what they're able to get out of those guys. Utah's a prime example. Would you trade rosters with Utah? Most years you would not, right?
I might have traded coaching staffs with them many, many times. But sure, yeah. But
most years you're not going to trade rosters with Utah.
Yeah.
But yet they were going to kick SC's ass multiple times over and over again the last few years, right? Because it's not just about the overall ranking of your talent. Like, obviously. The interesting thing is I just pulled up the Athlon top 25, preseason top 25. EA Sports put out their top 25 overall team rankings. Shocker, Georgia number one, 95 overall as a team. There's a big gap down to 93 overall, which is Ohio State and Oregon. The interesting thing, I've got the Athlon top 25. Where do you think it differs from the EA Sports? Let's talk about the top five. EA Sports, one Georgia, two Ohio State, three Oregon, four Alabama, five Texas. Where do you think Athlon differs there?
They probably have Notre Dame in there over Alabama.
Nope.
No? Am I right about... So no, it's Notre Dame is not...
Athlon?
Yeah.
Number one, Georgia. Number two, Ohio State. Number three, Oregon. Number four, Texas. EA has them at five. And number five, Ole Miss. EA has them at 15. But I think this goes to the point too of like, this is the problem with where I think that it's worth talking about SC's lack of talent compared to the elite programs, is those teams at the top there have the elite of the elite talent and the elite of the elite coaching. And when you do that, you're going to be ranked high on Athlon too.
Yeah.
When there's a discrepancy, it's because you are overachieving or underachieving, depending on whatever it is. SC is underachieved compared to their talent, right? Missouri is a team that is 10th on Athlon Sports predictive rankings, top 25 going into the season. They are nowhere to be found on the EA top 25.
Yeah.
That means they're overachieving.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of how it works. SC's got to find a way to achieve better and use the talent that they got.
At least stop underachieving.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Alicia, we are 40 minutes into this thing, which means it is time to get into everyone's favorite segment, at least my favorite segment. It's
mine too.
Is it?
Yeah, I love this segment.
It's because you don't really have to do much.
I don't have to do anything. I just get to sit here and react and enjoy.
Yeah, it's a lot of efforting for me.
I know.
Here we go.
A big 10 minutes.
We're talking about Northwestern. Northwestern University, founded in 1851. The University on this week's A Big Ten Minutes. From Evanston, Illinois, just off the Purple Line, CTAL, whatever you want to call it, the Purple Line up there, just north of Chicago. They are the Wildcats, and Alicia, the origin story, I think, is great here, and it's one that I think that Northwestern, I am going to make the argument for you. I think Northwestern is the USC of the Big Ten. USC, I mean, of the original Big Ten. Yeah, yep.
Of when they actually had 10 teams.
Yeah. Well, currently, as we know, we screwed up the dates.
This is true.
They are the SC of the Big Ten,
right,
for now.
Until
August 2nd. Then we can, you know, talk about other things. But of the original Big Ten, the original 10, I think Northwestern is the USC of the Big Ten because they were founded by Methodists to be a private Methodist college in a large American metropolis with an awkward geographical name. It makes people think that they're this lowly directional school instead of a rich, spoiled, pretentious private glam school of the big city with sports teams called the Fighting Methodists. Does that sound familiar?
I mean, that's
USC.
Quite familiar, yes.
That's Northwestern. Until the university goes secular, wants a different name, and therefore adopts a new name derived from losing. This is exactly USC. This is USC. Northwestern became the Wildcats in 1924 because of an article in the Chicago Tribune that said they, quote, played like Wildcats, akin to USC being Trojans because they fought like Trojans. Well, Northwestern in 1924 lost to then arch rival UChicago, a big time Big Ten matchup back in the day. They played like Wildcats, according to the Chicago Tribune, in a losing effort, and therefore became the Northwestern Wildcats. So basically, Northwestern is USC, but with two Rose Bowl appearances instead of 34. It all checks out, right?
It is really funny to me how many nicknames for sports teams came from losing efforts. Like, you never hear, like, oh, it's because they won the big game and they did so, yeah, like ex-mascot now, and that's how they did it. Instead, it's always like, no, they lost, but they tried. Like, these are good job, good effort nicknames,
yeah,
and I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised no one's named, like, the Tennessee Tryhards instead of the Volunteers or whatever. Yeah. Let's talk about the fight song. Ready for this?
Here we go.
Go, you Northwestern. Break through that line. With our colors flying, we will cheer you all the time. You, rah, rah. Go, you Northwestern. Fight for victory. Spread the fame of our name, of our fair name. Go Northwestern, win that game. Then there's whistling and yelling, which I'm not going to do. Go Northwestern, go. Go Northwestern, go. Hit 'em hard, hit 'em low. Go Northwestern, go.
Okay, again, we have the rah-rahs. The rah, mm-hmm, like the Big Ten
those
is all about those
gotta
rahs.
Gotta have the rahs, yeah.
A more fight for victory sort of thematic.
No sushi with these rahs, though.
I will say, hit 'em hard, hit 'em low, go Northwestern, go, is fantastic.
Hit 'em low.
Yeah. Even though it's not very sporting. I'm pretty sure,
like,
there's no sport where hitting them low is a...
Isn't hit 'em hard, hit 'em low, isn't that part of the Fly Eagles Fly, too?
It might be.
It also, why is it that I find NFL fight songs very corny? But, like, college football ones, I'm like, no, this is, like, historic, bro. Like, this has, like, cachet. And then you, yeah, hear, like, Fly Eagles Fly, and, like, God, this is kind of embarrassing. Like, grown men are singing this? This is embarrassing. But I think the funny thing about the fight song is it begins with, go, you Northwestern. Again, that is incorrect. It's Northwestern University. It's not you Northwestern. This is the opposite of what Nebraska is doing. Where NU, Huskers, even though it's the University of Nebraska. People got to remember the order that their school is named.
Are we sure this wasn't transcribed improperly? Like, what if it's like, go, you, Northwestern? you, Northwestern. I'm looking
like
at you.
Like in second person?
I'm looking at you, Northwestern. I need you to go, Northwestern.
That feels weirdly aggressive if you're yelling at your school
and
like
I'm
that.
I'm pointing at the camera for those who don't who aren't watching on YouTube.
Anyways, let's talk about the alums. A bunch of actors. Zach Braff, Warren
Scrubs.
Beatty, Zoe Deschanel,
New Girl.
Charlton Heston, Seth Meyers, Gary Marshall, David Schwimmer.
Friends.
Jerry Springer, the Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle, and of course, the Queen of the Castle herself and America's first female president, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
That's a lot of sitcoms, a lot of sitcom representation, and Jessie's not a fan. She's I don't know if the people can hear her, but she is currently laying underneath my chair and whining.
Not a fan of Wildcats, for sure.
No.
A lot of sportscasters, of course, from Medill and a sports reporter from Medill, one of the biggest J schools in the country. When you think of big J schools, you think of Syracuse,
I wanted to go to Northwestern.
Missouri, and Northwestern because of the J school?
I didn't apply. Yeah, because of the J school. I didn't apply because in reality, I was just never going to go out of state.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to go. I did look at them.
Well, there you go. You could have gone to Medill with Brent Musburger, Kevin Blackstone from Around the Horn, Michael Wilbon from PTI, longtime LA Times reporter covering the LA Kings, Helene Elliott, Mike and Mike's Mike Greenberg, The Athletic's Stuart Mandel, former ESPNer Rachel Nichols, Twitter favorites Darren Revell, and the late, great Craig Seeger, all Northwestern Wildcats. Apart from celebs and journalists, Northwestern has also produced some model citizens, such as Rod Blagojevich and Pat Fitzgerald.
Yeah, stand-up guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about your perception of Northwestern fans. What do you got?
I feel like a failure every time we ask this question, because, like, have I interacted with Northwestern fans?
Probably not.
I was disappointed by the reaction of some Northwestern fans that I was exposed to on Twitter about the Pat Fitzgerald of it all.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that that's a fair representation.
I think we
were
all disappointed in
Pat
Fitzgerald.
I mean, yeah,
too.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I when I think of Northwestern fans, I think of the Medill school stuff, because Northwestern goes into March Madness, and then suddenly every sports writer in America is like creaming their pants about what Northwestern is doing. You think of football stars. It's Otto Graham, Pat Fitzgerald, Darnell Autry. Remember Darnell Autry? No? No? You don't remember the Rose Bowl? 1996. USC's big win over Northwestern in the Rose Bowl. The Trojans are 5-0 all time against Northwestern. The Wildcats have never won a national championship, but they have 8 Big Ten titles, including 1995. Which led to the 1996 Rose Bowl. Northwestern's second ever bowl game, their first since 1948. SC blew a 17-point lead, but scored the game's final 10 points to win 41-32. Keyshawn Johnson went insane, 12 catches, for a then Rose Bowl record of 216 receiving yards, including a 56-yard TD catch from Brad Otten. The next USC-Northwestern game will take place in 2025 at the Coliseum, and then 2028 in Evanston. By that time, the new Ryan Field will be done. So that's kind of cool, even though it's a bummer that SC won't get to play them at Wrigley.
That was something we were really looking forward to,
yeah,
the possibility of that. But alas.
Yeah. David Braun is their head coach. He worked under Matt Entz. You might know him, USC's linebacker coach. He worked under him at North Dakota State. The Wildcats went 8-5 in year one under Braun a year ago. They had a favorable schedule last year. They didn't have to play Ohio State or Michigan. They won their last four games, kind of went chalk through everything else. They beat Wisconsin, Illinois on the road, and beat Utah in the Vegas Bowl, finished 8-5, and feel good about themselves. Now they returned 17 starters. So don't look now, but Northwestern might be kind of good. Maybe it's a good thing that SC is not having to play them. They're on the up and up. We'll see. Northwestern has been to the Big Ten championship game when you least expect. They keep going there. So we'll see what happens with the Wildcats going forward. And that is your Big Ten Minutes on Northwestern. There you go.
Nailed it.
Timed it up. Pretty
decent.
Pretty
good.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the mailbag, shall we?
You've got mail.
All right, let's start with an email we got from John in Oakland. Hi, Alicia and Michael. Over on the We Are SC podcast this week, host Chris Arledge went on a long rant about the deep criticism of Lincoln Riley's overall recruiting strategy. He believes trying to get players out of the SEC country is the primary strategy, and viewing local California players as a backup plan B has and will continue to fail. That Riley's strategy has ceded California to the likes of Oregon and have turned them into the king of the West Coast recruiting instead of USC. That it's a fool's errand to think that you could hold on to any kid raised in SEC country who grows up a hardcore fan of an SEC team, has close ties to immediate family and friends in love with that team, and who the moment they announce they're going to USC are immediately and incessantly bombarded with questions from family, friends, coaches on why they're being a turncoat and how it's a huge mistake given USC's poor performance in recent seasons, especially on defense. So what's your take on Arledge and the We Are SC hard negative critique of Lincoln Riley's overall recruiting strategy? Fight on, John in Oakland. Lisa, what say you?
I think it's completely valid to question the out-of-state recruiting pushes relative to USC's in-state recruiting wins. I pointed out on our last episode that it is less of a problem that USC didn't manage to hold on to commitments from five-star defensive linemen from Georgia, and more of a problem that USC is being completely out-recruited by the likes of Oregon, by the likes of Texas A&M, as Greg in the chat said he was going to ask us about Marco Jones and Noah McHale committing to Texas A&M. Texas A&M, Oregon, Alabama, Texas, they're all coming in and poaching the top talent in the state of California, and particularly in Southern California. The players that USC has homegrown in their backyard that should be in Cardinal and Gold, or at least the USC should have the pick of them to come to USC. And I think there is a universe where it's not about whether or not USC is trying to get players out of SEC country. It's about your strategy aligning with your philosophy. If USC wanted to be like Texas A&M or Oregon and say, we are going to recruit out of state, but we are going to sweeten the pot at every turn with NIL dollars in order to secure these commitments, then the strategy theoretically could work. If USC wanted to say, we're going to focus our attention on California so that we don't have to throw the bag at players as often because the natural advantage of being able to stay close to home, being able to play in your backyard where your family can watch you play, all of that kind of stuff, counteracts some of the NIL, the NIL approach, mm-hmm. Then that would work perfectly well. USC has the wires backwards. Like, there's a strategy that works if you don't want to spend big high school recruiting dollars, yeah. And there's a strategy that works if you do want to spend big high school recruiting dollars. And USC is doing the opposite, or seems to be doing the opposite of those strategies. Part of this, I will say, like the Georgia guys, it's entirely possible that that was just, I don't want to call it hubris, but maybe a tiny, tiny touch of inexperience from Coach Henderson. In terms of, he hasn't done a lot of college recruiting. I think his idea was to go out and just get the biggest and brightest and best and convince them to come to USC. And maybe this is his hard lesson that you got to pick your battles on that front, because yeah. You can't rely on those guys to stay committed. That it's a marathon, not a sprint. Which I think it's entirely possible that that's part of that. But if it was just that, that would be one thing. It seems like these recruiting battles, certainly the California ones, are being undercut across the board at multiple positions. So it's something that USC has to fix. It's something that USC has to pay attention to. And again, it's pick your lane. you don't have to say we're not going to focus all our recruiting on out of state commits if you want to go hard with the NIL dollars. Like, if that's what you want to do, then go all out. But it's like USC is straddling that middle that's not really working.
We talked about this a lot last episode, and the more I think about it, I think that so much of the frustration comes from the college football offseason being so long. And so it's so much time to analyze every single recruiting thing, and every recruiting win gets blown up, and every recruiting loss gets blown up and into these big sort of things. You know, people love to talk about how SC doesn't have the talent in the trenches that these SEC schools do. And then SC goes out and tries to get the commitments from these guys, and, oh, but you should just focus on the guys here then. Okay. Like, you, anything that you do, you can make up a very sound, logical, all that reason to not do it or to do the opposite, because recruiting, they're like, recruiting is like a diet. It works if you're good at it and you stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes down to your willingness to, yeah, get the NIL stuff going, and your willingness to display that you are a brand that cares and wins and does things for your players and all those things. Oregon does all those things and throws the NIL dollars and has wins to show for it. And there's a generation of kids who grow up in California now watching Oregon be the cool school who's going to do all the things that recruits want and SC hasn't done. I understand why the geography aspect of it gets people riled up, and I think that it's totally valid, and it's frustrating to watch SC not have the guys at Mater Dei and Bosco locked down. I totally understand that, but at the same time, like, if you just win and if you focus on if you focus on limiting underachievement with the talent that you got and all those things, everything sort of comes right, right? Like, Pete Carroll recruited across the country all the time. He also won a lot of games and also had Long Beach Poly and Mater Dei as direct pipelines to Heritage Hall. Like,
well, he came in and won with talent that he'd inherited.
To an extent.
No.
But he also got this 3-star wide receiver from Tampa, Florida, named Mike Williams. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Yeah, he picked his spots. He found guys to develop, and then he won some big recruiting battles for big time guys in the trenches across the country.
Sean Cody.
Yeah. You have to do it all. But the point is, you have to find that balance, and it does feel like USC doesn't have the balance right now. And that doesn't mean it's sky is falling. That doesn't mean it's the end of the world. That doesn't mean that USC is doomed to being a second rate program from here till the end of eternity, or even this next year or anything like that. I think that so much of this is far more complicated than anyone likes to acknowledge.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's funny. I don't want to like accuse people of anything, but like, I think it's funny that the majority of us who will sit here and say USC needs more NIL dollars, I sure as hell haven't given USC any NIL dollars. Like, does USC have grassroots NIL stuff going on the way that that you have in Tuscaloosa or Baton Rouge or anything like that? Like, I don't know. Like, does USC have literal, like, the head of the billionaire head of Nike funding their NIL program? No. But like, I can't control whether or not USC's version of Phil Knight comes forward with millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And I don't have the funds to spend on, dudes who put on pads and go out and hit each other, because because life exists.
Sure.
Because I have other responsibilities. And it's all, I mean, yeah, it's all more complicated than just like USC needs more NIL dollars. Well, USC needs to recruit better. But, it's like, well, yeah, but you have to work your way there.
But I guess, yeah. And my point is, like, I think that it's so much more complicated than strictly geography. Because, yeah, SC isn't getting the guys out of state that you want, but they're also not getting the guys in state that they want either. Like,
but some of them they are. Like, that's the thing. Is like, it's, you know, you win some and you lose some. And USC has won some big recruiting battles against big-time programs, but also lost recruiting battles against big-time programs. Because every single individual recruit is motivated by something different.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that USC is doing things particularly well right now. Sure. I think they could be certainly doing it better.
But I think that's the point to me. It's like, I don't think it matters where the recruits come from. It matters that you're getting them, and it matters that you're able to win and you're able to take yourself seriously and have, you know, NIL money and, you know, with follow through on your promises and all those kind of things, right? Like, those are the things that matter. And, you know, I think not being able to recruit at the level that SC fans want has more to do with that to me.
Yeah.
Than strictly geography.
Like Greg said, is there a possibility USC can finish with a top 10 class if they were to go 8-4 this year? I highly doubt it. Number one, because if USC goes 8-4 this year, they will have lost NIL dollars, I guarantee you, because donors are going to start saying, well, what's the point of sending my NIL to USC if they're not going to win with it?
What does 8-4 look like, though?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's always the case, but 8-4 will not be something that people are generally satisfied with. I know that you will give the eye test sort of thing, like, did you just lose by 3 points to everybody? Yeah, okay, whatever. But I think in this, the question is very clearly,
sure,
8-4, most USC fans would say that's not a good result. That's not a good end result to the season.
Yeah.
And that,
I'm just saying, in 2016, they went 9-3.
Right. But
they also won a Rose Bowl and going 9-3.
Yeah, and a lot of that was how you finished the season, but also, vibes, but also, like, that season also showed you how far away USC was from winning a national title because...
Hey, Colin Cowherd thought they should have been in the playoff.
Which would have been certainly interesting.
Playoffs? You kidding me?
Getting hot at the end of the season could have been really interesting, but also the magic of that season could have been, you know, cut off at the knees if USC had gotten in, because then maybe they just get blown out and it's proof that they're not there. So, yeah. The point being that, like, if USC goes 8-4, it's much more likely that that will have been a bad result, that fans will continue to stop coming to games, that donors will continue to stop sending in their NIL, and that opposing teams will be able to continually negatively recruit USC in terms of the underperformance, in terms of the quote-unquote Lincoln Riley hot seat, in terms of the general... The general credibility of the program will be undercut by that. So yes, it does come down to winning. Winning does matter, because winning, especially if you're in Los Angeles, winning is what drives buzz. Winning is what drives dollars being, buzz is what drives dollars being brought in. Dollars being brought in is what drives recruiting. Like, it's all a circle.
Yeah. 100%. All right, let's go to a email that we got from Tony in Denora, PA. This is Tony from Denora, PA, says Tony. I hope you guys are having a great summer. It's been hot back here, but I ain't complaining. 95 beats 25 degrees any day. Okay, on to my rant. Who died and made Mr. Feinbaum Mr. College Football? Tony Barnhart is still living, and that's his title. I know he's an ESPN talking head, and they require him to say some stupid and outrageous things, but he's an SEC apologist. All he cares about is football down south. He's now making this personal with Lincoln. Is he jealous of Lincoln's good looks? Or maybe it's the millions of dollars Lincoln is bringing in. Maybe it's the 50-room mansion that overlooks the ocean in SoCal. I'll tell you what it is. I think him and a lot of other people are scared to death. Lincoln is going to get the program rolling. Fight on, Tony, the Denora, PA. I'm
going to say something that I hope USC fans take with the way that it's intended.
Here we go. Buckle up.
Talking heads don't care about individual programs as much as you think they do. Paul Feinbaum cares about the SEC because he lives in SEC country and he deals with SEC programs more closely. He knows the SEC like the back of his hand, and anything he says about anything that's not in the SEC is from the perspective of an outsider. And if you are an outsider and you're looking at the current state of USC, yeah, you're going to be pretty negative about it. Like, it's very simple. It's very easy to get a surface level view of the state of USC and say things are not going well over there.
Yeah.
Or you can have your opinions about Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma the way that he did and make your judgments about that. You can have your there are a lot of people in football who are inherently mistrusting or skeptical of coaches who are offensive gurus because of the defense wins football mantra. So, like, there are a million reasons why Paul Feinbaum might not be totally rah-rah with USC. I think I don't think any USC fan should ever expect anyone from SEC country to be rah-rah USC.
Well, that's especially when Cowherd is the inverse, right?
Yeah, I mean, Cowherd is rah-rah USC, and it's obnoxious sometimes.
Right.
So
yeah, I think that, you know, when I think about this stuff, it's like, I get from the outside perspective why Lincoln Riley is the lightning rod that he is. He's won a lot of games. He has no national championship. And as Americans, and not just Americans, but this is a thing in, you know, other countries, other sports, whatever, we love to reduce everything to, yeah, but have you won a championship?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Harry Kane is super good. Yeah, but Spurs, right? Like, it's a thing, right? And Lincoln Riley has been so good, but doesn't have a national championship. And you put that and you combine it with, he got the SC job and then said a lot of things that ruffle feathers because people are petty. Like, the Coliseum is going to be the mecca of college football. That was a quote that is not going to make people who live in Alabama happy, right? And then the other thing about it is the Chauvin fraud of Lincoln Riley, again, a man who's won a lot of games, losing is... That's
you can't lose.
You can talk about, like, that is something worth talking. The same reason why, you know, we can sort of sit here and, you know, take random pot shots at, like, what Clemson has been doing people the last 3 years, right?
People take shots at Ryan Day. People were taking shots at Jim Harbaugh for a long time.
Yeah,
and then he won the title, and that's what shuts people up.
Right. Yeah. We've talked about it before, like, there's really only two coaches in America that do not get, now there's only one that do not get critiqued on a weekly basis. And it's Kirby Smart.
Kirby Smart.
Like,
and as Dabo,
Ohio State fans want Ryan Day gone.
Yes.
Michigan fans wanted Harbaugh gone until he won a national title. Until he became a naughty boy, and then suddenly they, you know, dug their heels in. And Dabo Swinney gets absolutely raked over the coals for a million different things.
Dabo's a national title winner, and this is how quickly it can change. A national title winner, and now we don't treat him like that because he's become kind of a laughingstock.
Look at the way people talk about James Franklin.
Yes. Look at the way I talk about James Franklin.
I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
from the other perspectives and all these stuff, like, there's very few coaches that have infallible, like, respect. Yeah.
And if Kirby Smart starts losing, he will get some comeuppance about a lot of things that, you know, he's probably been gotten a pass on.
Right.
If he starts losing.
Yeah. It just... Win games. Win you games. You're going to recruit better. You're going to have better coverage nationally. You're going
to. You can't be a national figure and lose and expect people to not bring it up.
Yeah. Win games. That's what it comes down to.
If Lincoln Riley, if Notre Dame had a Heisman winner and had a defense that gave up 50 points a game and went 8-4, we would be roasting them. Just
they went 12-0, and everyone said that they were frauds.
Yeah,
Yeah. Because Brian Kelly didn't win a national championship at the FBS level.
Yeah.
He's won elsewhere, but not at the FBS level. Mm-hmm. And so he's a fraud. The only non-fraud is Kirby Smart. The only non-fraud in soccer is Pep Guardiola. Everybody else is a fraud.
Jurgen Klopp is not a fraud. Future U.S. manager Jurgen Klopp is not a fraud.
Okay. All right. Moving on. Let's go to a Discord message we got from Jessica F. What are you guys looking forward to most with the move to the Big Ten? And what are you not looking forward to?
I am looking forward to new matchups. I think it'll be fun to get to know the Big Ten teams. I think it will be cool to get to see USC play in new places, to interact with new teams and just have new experiences. I am not looking forward to the sort of conversations around travel and figuring out how much that's going to actually impact USC. I'm not looking forward to seeing the dark side of the Big Ten fan bases that we will almost certainly become familiar with, because every fan base has a dark side. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned how to deal with Utah Twitter. They drove me crazy for a little while, but I sort of learned how to deal with them. We're going to have to learn how to deal with
Purdue Twitter,
Michigan Twitter, like these fan bases that we haven't necessarily had to go head to head with in terms of whether or not they're going to be obnoxious or dropping in our mentions or anything like that. Like, we're going to have to adjust.
The Bud Elliott clip this week talking about the difference between Michigan and Ohio State fans.
No.
You know, we talked about the Wikipedia pages in the state of Michigan, right? Bud Elliott said the difference between Michigan and Ohio State fans is Michigan fans will send you an email with an attachment that has 10,000 words, like high-level diction, all this stuff to tell you why you are wrong, and Ohio State fans will use the same number of characters over the course of 1,000 tweets. Which I think checks out. That absolutely checks out. Yeah. I think I'm most looking forward to, you know, the name brands coming to the Coliseum. I think it's going to be awesome. Like, I grew up looking at the future schedules in the program, and that was like, that gave me so much life. I was like a, you know, 10-year-old, and I'm like, look, in 2005 Nebraska is gonna come, and then it got pushed back to 2006, and I had to wait another year for it, and I was so sad. And then Nebraska came, and I was, you know, by that time I was 17, and I was like geeked for, you know, watching SC and the Huskers. Like, it's one of those things where you know, you want to see the big name brand, you want to see all those players coming around to the Coliseum, all the big fan bases. You know, as a kid, Kansas State and Auburn coming to the Coliseum, Florida State, like, those hallmark memories. And there's going to be a new generation that is going to have hallmark memories about Penn State coming to the Coliseum and Nebraska and Wisconsin and all coming to the Coliseum this year, which I think is going to be super exciting. What I'm not looking forward to is not having trips that you can drive to.
Yeah, for sure.
We had lunch with our friend Jake from the What's Bruin Show today, and we recorded a true car cast in his car while illegally double parked, by the way.
And it almost got hit by an elderly woman who clearly should not be driving anymore.
Yes. Go listen to that. It was a little live, like, we nearly got hit while recording. It was great.
It was very fun.
But anyways, we talked about then. What sucks is, like, I don't know that I'm going to miss Cal. Certainly I'm not going to miss Cal Twitter. But I'm going to miss that SC has a game 6 hours away.
Yeah.
That you can drive to.
Like I said on that show, I'm going to miss having an excuse to go to Arizona and hit some of our favorite haunts. Like,
yeah. Oregano's.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chuck Box. I miss Phoenix. I miss Phoenix. Not really. Not in July. What am I talking about? All right. Let's go to other questions that we've got here on YouTube. Let's run through these rapid fire. West Texas Mike says, I don't like the term fraud. It's too aggressive. I agree. It's aggressive, but also like lame and reductive. And
it's so reductive. That's the issue.
Unoriginal.
I like fraud in like an ironic sense where it's just, you know, that you're overdoing it, but mm-hmm. You can only use it if you know that you're just trying to be hyperbolic.
Yeah. Well, Sexist Mike also says that, come on, Alicia, we need you donating a minimum of 8% of your income to House of Victory.
I mean, it's where's
your tithing? Is your tithing not going to USC Athletics?
It's really our fault that USC can't afford those NIL dollars because we are not sending our thousands in.
Greg says, what if the defense plays better than the offense?
Okay, you and I had some conversations about those college football 25 rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Because we talked about, like, what if that is the reality? What if USC's defense is top 15 and the offense is top 25 and the defense is better than the offense? Is that ultimately a good thing for USC? I think the balanced nature of those ratings, on the one hand, it would be a really good thing.
Sure.
On the other hand, if USC is 25th nationally in offense, that probably means the quarterback and the offensive line have not worked out, that the wide receivers have not really taken a big step.
What are you talking? Are you talking total offensive yards per game?
Sure.
Like,
that would be a pretty steep step back for a Lincoln Riley offense to be...
SC was 10th last year, 3rd in 2022. 2021, SC was 23rd.
Like, let's say scoring offense, for example, because, like, USC under Lincoln Riley has scored 41 points a game, at least in each of those seasons. Now, yeah, that's with Caleb
scoring
Williams.
Offense last year, SC was 3rd in the country.
The 25th...
Third in the country in 22 also.
The 25th scoring offense in the country last year was Texas A&M scoring 33.3 points per game. I can tell you...
Alabama was 24th.
I can tell you, having watched both of those teams, pass. Hard pass.
So here's my issue about... Okay, first of all, the defense being better than the offense completely depends on what that means.
Yes.
Is the offense competent and the defense is very good? Because you can make the case that, like, if that's the case, bar none, SC's chances of winning games goes up.
Hey,
absolutely.
We said for a long time if USC had a 20-point defense, they could win 10 games a season easily.
Yes.
With a 30-point offense. Like,
yes.
So if that's what we're saying, then yes, that's fine. If USC has a 30-point offense, I think that is a huge red flag for Lincoln Riley. That's the thing I don't like. But let's say it takes a step back to a 35-point offense. 35-point offense with a 20-point defense, sign me up today.
I think that my concern here, my only concern about the defense being better than the offense, is that an indictment on the offense? And if it is, that's slightly concerning, especially because SC is joining a conference where that's the profile of teams they're playing. Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, Illinois. These are all schools that are sound defensively and have offenses that vary from ass to eh, right?
Yeah.
And so I think inherently SC's task defensively is going to be better this year because they don't have to go up against all the high-flying offenses that they did a year ago. So I think that will help to a certain extent. They're not going to have to face the amount of speed on offense that they had to play in the Pac-12 last year. That certainly will help. Having said that, like, I think that if you resort to playing like Wisconsin, then I think that suddenly what makes you unique and makes your top end ability higher, I think, starts to really drop. Like, now I'm not saying that you need to be bad on defense, but, like, you need your offense to still be very good. So if the defense is better, then what, like, what is the context of that? Is basically what I'm saying. You still need your offense to be.
How much better? Like, if the defense is better by objectively,
put it this way.
Point in SP plus, then that's perfectly fine. If the defense is 20 points better than the offense, then that's a problem.
If USC is not in the top four in offensive statistics at the end of the season, something went majorly wrong.
Oh, no. No. Oh, that's... I disagree with that. I think if USC is not in the top 15, then something's gone majorly wrong.
No, I'm talking about the top four in the Big Ten.
Oh, in the Big Ten.
In the Big Ten. Oregon can have a better offense than you. Sure.
Okay.
Ohio State can have a better offense than you. If Penn State...
You should have a better offense than Penn State.
Yeah, if these schools are having a better offense than you, then something went wrong.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think that SC's ability to still, you know, be a, you know, that you're hoping, you're praying for that, you know, 50-1 chance that SC puts it together to win the Big Ten or whatever. That is dependent on the offense not taking much of a step back, because historically they have not under Lincoln Riley, even when getting rid of a Heisman quarterback. So, and we talked about this before, that would be a big red flag for Lincoln Riley, because that's where he has never took a misstep.
Yeah.
Is an offense that way. Ron Murdy says, should USC pursue home games with Stanford and Cal? I think yes, we both agree. Especially going forward.
Yep.
Sagar says, the real question is, what is everyone eating tomorrow? Greg also chimes in with, what are we eating tomorrow? We're doing a sort of a Mexican barbecue. We're doing pollo asado and carne asada.
Yeah, tacos.
Yeah. Tacos and dillas. I think we're super pumped about that. All right, that's going to wrap this thing up. Again, we'll be back next week. July 10th, talk more about USC football here as we get ready for the 2024 USC season, the first of the Big Ten era. Next week on the Big Ten Minutes, we'll go learn about the Ohio State Buckeyes. You ever heard of them?
I have.
Yeah.
OHIO.
We'll talk about them, and then only five teams left: Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, Rutgers, and Wisconsin. So look forward to that as we get close. Media Day, a few weeks away. We hope that you all stay safe and enjoy your holiday. Don't mess with fireworks. Like, don't be dumb.
Yeah, keep all your digits, please.
Yeah. Be safe.
And hit the like button with the thumb that you hopefully still have on Friday, and hit the subscribe and tell your friends about the show.
Yeah, all of that. We'll be back next time. Until then, we will see
you.
See ya.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.